Hello, and thanks for listening. This is Michael Wolfeld, staff naturopath with Purium, and this is a Let's Talk Health segment. The goal of these segments is to attempt to give general answers for questions that come up over and over and over again. So as we get more and more of these recorded and online, hopefully you will start sharing these with your people that are doing the cleanse or having health issues and so on and so forth. So today's Let's Talk Health segment is entitled Weight Loss Tips. I would say the single most popular phone call and email that I get, and I prefer emails to phone calls as we are getting so busy. I can easily get over 100 emails a day plus phone calls, so you don't play telephone tag with an email, which is nice. And plus it gives me time to research if I need to give a good answer. But without a doubt, people hit plateaus, they don't lose weight, they haven't seen the kind of results they had hoped for, so on and so forth. So what I'm going to share right now are not only tips that can help with furthering weight loss success, but these are actually ideas that can help you have a happier life, more peace, more harmony, you name it. Because everything works together, and that's the first point that we need to make, is that when we take one thing out of the big picture, it never works. There's an expression that if you pull the cat's tail, you get the whole cat. If you try and straighten the pig's tail, it goes back to being curly again. In other words, these are things that just are the way they are. So when you take an issue, like for example, I'm trying to lose weight, I'm not losing weight, and you isolate that and say, okay, why am I not losing weight? But you don't address a lot of other issues, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Well, guess what? It may be one of these other issues, areas, that is having the most effect on why the weight loss isn't happening. So, obviously, stress plays a big factor. If you are under stress while you're trying to lose weight, it usually will not be too successful because stress creates toxins. And I think as most people understand now, our weight loss program is based on detoxifying, because once you detoxify, you will automatically start to lose weight because fat cells, one of their main functions is to store toxins. So if we are producing and having less toxins in our body, we have less reason to have fat cells. So obviously stress creates toxins. Too much activity on low calories will definitely produce toxins. Lots of activity produce toxins all the time, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we are meant to be active. But if you are highly active, whether you're working out or just have a strenuous kind of job physically or mentally, that does produce what are called metabolites, which are toxins. That's from the metabolic process. And if there's not something to buffer those, as in healthy organic food, those can have a negative effect on weight loss because, once again, they're acting as additional toxins. So those, I would say, are the two main physical areas that most people can be knowledgeable about and be aware of, so that if either of those issues are there, you know, you can take steps accordingly to try and minimize. Now, one of the most valuable things that people can do for weight loss is to learn and utilize their thoughts. It has been said that thoughts are things. Thoughts are powerful. Ayurvedic medicine puts a lot of emphasis on thought patterns. And Ayurvedic medicine is considered the oldest system of health care known to man. It's well over 10 or 15, 20,000 years old. And it has stood the test of time. So what do we mean by how can thoughts affect our body? Well, I can give you a couple examples. One example that is pretty dramatic is an experiment was done, and this was under, you know, clinical trial basis. I mean, in other words, it was very well organized and orchestrated. And they found a group of, I believe, 30 people who had roughly the same skill level when it came to taking a basketball and shooting a hoop with it. In other words, they all tried out for this, and they all, you know, missed and hit about the same rate. And so this group of people, after they were finally weaned out, so they would, you know, have the, you know, they would be as close as they could to each other when they started, they were divided into two groups. And you can find this study online, by the way. It was done quite a few years ago. And other studies have been done since then, but this was sort of rather dramatic and famous. And so half the group spent, I believe, 2 or 3 hours a day. And these people were paid, obviously. 2 or 3 hours a day they spent shooting baskets. And that was their assignment. Now, the other half of group, the other 15 people, never picked up a basketball, did not even walk out to where the court was. And for about the same amount of time each day, they spent relaxing and visualizing themselves standing at the line, throwing the basketball into the hoop. And that's all they did. They did that for the same amount of time. Now, I believe this went on for 30 days, or I don't remember the exact time, but, you know, they both did these same behaviors, one shooting baskets, one just visualizing baskets. And at the end of this period of time, they were both tested again. Believe it or not, they were statistically equal in terms of the amount of improvement each group showed. Which means that all the people were doing, who were visualizing, was imagining that they were making the baskets. Never touched the basketball. Whereas the other group were shooting baskets every day. Now, friends, I don't know about you, but that is pretty amazing if you really give it some thought. Okay. Example number two, and this is a true story. This can also be found online. There was a prisoner of war, and I don't remember if this was Afghanistan or this might have been Vietnam. I think it was Vietnam. But anyhow, this man was a prisoner of war for about 3 years, and he was in solitary. I mean, he was fed, you know, but I mean, he wasn't beaten or anything. And the only thing that he had access to was, because they gave him, you know, some books. And, of course, most of the books were not written in English. But they actually gave him a book on golf that was written in English. Now, this man had never played golf in his life. But he realized that if he wanted to maintain his sanity, he would learn as much about golf as he could. And like I said, he'd never been to a golf course, never picked up a golf club. And so for, I think, 2 or 3 years until he was released, he basically just combed that book backwards and forwards and actually started playing golf in his mind, you know, making different shots as they were described, using different clubs and different irons. And it kept him sane. that really kept him sane. And, of course, finally he was released. He got to go back home to the States. And he actually figured, well, what the heck? You know, I might as well try my hand at golf. And so he actually found that he was pretty decent. And he actually did a pro-am tournament and shocked everybody because he actually did very, very well. Came in like the top 10. And he had never played golf in his life before that. Only in his mind. Now, those are two pretty dramatic examples of how thoughts can be used to your advantage. Now, for those of you who are more of the analytical bent, here is an example that will give you an idea of how and why this works. Probably in the last 15 years, 20 years, medical science has some pretty amazing things that they can do. It's sometimes they don't know how to use what they have, but they do have some pretty amazing technology that's come along. Well, one of the things that they have actually developed is the ability to measure and quantify electric waves and patterns that go on in the brain with different activities. And so one of the experiments that was conducted is they found a person, actually I think they found a couple people, that were all basically, you know, beginner piano players. They just sort of banged the keys, you know, and had fun with it, but I mean they were not exactly what you call well-versed. And these people were asked to practice and, you know, and improve their skills, which they did. And what they discovered was obviously these people got better at what they were doing and playing the piano. But what the medical science end of it discovered was that when the changes were happening with the physical ability to play the piano better, they were able to quantify different parts of the brain that actually were changing. So in other words, what we use our brains for, our thoughts, our emotions, our feelings, have a direct impact on how our brain functions. Not just temporarily, but permanently. So this is why people that do a lot of sort of nitpicky kind of work, whether they make models or do crossword puzzles or, you know, things like this, they often, if they have a good diet, they often have the least amount of dementia, you know, Alzheimer's kinds of things pop up. Because they're constantly making their brain work. So folks, these are three pretty good examples of why we should become very careful about the kinds of thoughts we entertain all the time. This is another good reason why staying away from television and news broadcasts is helpful, because most of it is negative. Most of it is designed to keep you enthralled so you'll listen to their commercials, so you'll buy their garbage. That's really the whole method that's going on. So the less you expose yourself to negativity on all levels, the better off you will be physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So I hope that this has had as much impact on you as it has on me. Because I can tell you, I really try and watch my thoughts. Because I realize that thoughts are things, and thoughts are powerful. So use them to accomplish what you want to accomplish. Thanks for listening. Take good care. God bless.